I chose my friends carefully. The more politically active black students, the foreign students, the Chicanos, the Marxist professors and structural feminists and punk rock performance poets. We smoked cigarettes, attended classes sparingly, drank beer heavily, and tried drugs enthusiastically. At night in the dorms we discussed neocolonialism, Frantz Fanon, Eurocentrism, and patriarchy. And if the high didn't solve whatever it was that was getting you down, it could at least help you laugh at the world's ongoing folly and see through all the hypocrisy and bullshit.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
Suicide is a suicide.
It is summer now, summer 1960, and unless the stock market skids into an abyss, or the world comes even closer to blowing itself up than it is now, we Americans are probably going to be talking endless politics during the next months. But certainly a whole coterie of TV programs will discuss the chances of this or that candidate, what he would do if elected, and other matters. We of the open mind thought we would go at it somewhat differently. We would ask the questions, despite all the hullabaloo, are there any real differences between a Democrat and a Republican now? And if there are, what are these differences?
Oh my God, seriously.
Oh my God, seriously.
I say, oh my God, seriously.
Seriously.
Oh my God, seriously.
Oh my God, seriously.
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 Sazlock.
Today, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are likely to edge closer to the White House. It's Super Tuesday. But just what is so super about it? Well, it's the largest voting day in the race to become President of the United States before the general election in November. 12 states and one territory will cast their votes in the Democratic and Republican primaries and caucuses. The results of these votes give candidates delegates, and they need a certain number of these to win the candidacy for their party. Republicans have to get 1,237, and around half of that number's available to win today. The Democrats need to secure 2,383 in total. Today, 800 of those are available. In both races, the delegates are given proportionately, meaning every vote counts and candidates need to secure decisive wins to take home more delegates. For the Republicans, you've got Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, John Kasich, and Ben Carson. Trump is leading in many of the polls. Over on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton leads in many polls and is up by double digits in some states. If she can secure a large delegate lead today, it could put her only challenger, Bernie Sanders, in a position where he can no longer catch up. Barack Obama's in his final year as President of the United States, having won in 2008. That year, he narrowly beat Hillary Clinton on Super Tuesday. Today is very likely going to confirm Trump and Clinton as presumptive candidates, but no one will be officially announced until the party's conventions, which will both be held in July.
Thank you.
This is one of those nights that does not keep the story going with the momentums it had before this. Where's Trump's momentum tonight? Where's Hillary's momentum tonight? This is one of those things that makes March 15th all the more important. It's not one of those things that makes us feel more confident in predicting what's coming.
Is it an eddy in the river?
Yeah, no, but listen, I have been humbled more than ever in my predictive life. I was one who didn't believe Donald Trump was going above 12 in the polls. When Bernie Sanders started off at 3%, I had all the confidence in the world he could get to 6, but not above that.
Yeah, I was arguing with a couple of people yesterday that nobody I've met in my whole life has ever changed.
Right.
People, I've never heard that. Do elections change? Can we have a change on a mark like today where something really does go in another direction because of a ridiculous a ridiculous debate this week?
Yeah.
But I don't know how you can watch that debate.
Republicans voting, Michael. Isn't this
that's
tonight
true.
Is a Republican
tonight's
voting night.
No,
it's real Republican voting night.
It's all Republican tonight, and that really, for someone like Cruz, is the moment he's been waiting for. He's been talking about when you get to the point where Republicans are voting for Republicans, it becomes a different race.
Because he's the most Republican.
But here's the problem.
The polls always showed that would happen.
But the numbers are still the same. And because of the advantage that Donald Trump has in the numbers, you know, Cruz is now looking at trying to get somewhere between 52% and 54% of the remaining vote. And that's a lot of a haul to make and to make up in this short bit of time between now and the 15th.
Puerto Rico's Republican primary. CNN now projecting Marco Rubio is the winner in Puerto Rico today, taking in 73.6% of the vote, with 25% of the precincts reporting there. Again, Marco Rubio with a wide lead. CNN projecting he will be the winner in Puerto Rico. 23 delegates up for grabs there. This is everyone there went to the polls with their concern about the massive debt crisis in Puerto Rico, which is more than $70 billion in the red. The Democratic race in Puerto Rico, not until June 5th.
I start you off this way. Holiday Magazine has an article this month on the Republican Party, which says this: a 1960 Republican is a Democrat, only less so. The Republican accepts much the same general policies, but the Democrat is for them joyfully, wholeheartedly. The Republican, reluctantly and gingerly. Mr. Johnson, would you begin this by a comment, please?
Mr. Goldman, I think it's very fortunate thing in our history that our two parties haven't been ideological, so they would split the country. On the other hand, I would say that since Teddy Roosevelt left the White House, and this probably agrees with this statement that you just read, that the Republicans have been about 10 to 15 years behind the Democrats in helping the American people adjust to the great changes of the 20th century.
Mr. Revere?
I'm not sure that it's a good thing. I think there are certain advantages to having this coalition system in a nation like ours. I think it's a perfectly true thing in general that the differences between our major parties are far less than the differences between among European parties. I think one can pin some ideological differences down, and I'd hope that we might get around to trying it later on.
Yeah. Mr. Bingham?
The candidates demand that the other candidates make the issues clear, and the other candidates insist they have made the issues clear. It seems to me that in a fundamental sense, there are no great issues. They've been settled over the course of the last generation. A generation ago, we were divided in this country on two important questions: whether the government had a responsibility to maintain certain limited standards of living for the American people, and whether the government should participate actively and expensively in foreign affairs. Look about us today, and these issues have been settled. As has been said, the Republicans have caught up with the Democrats. If it is a difference, it's a difference of degree only. I'd put it very much as that statement you quoted was. I'd say that Democrat is a man who wants to expand the powers of the government. The Republican tends to be a man who wants to limit the powers of government.
That's not true!
Stop by a bakery here in Columbia.
Thank you.
I am so greatly appreciative because today you sent a message that we can build on the record and accomplishments of President Obama. Now let there be no doubt, in any boardroom or executive suite across this country, this campaign and our victory is for Wall Street banks. And that's especially true. These are words to live by. We need the biggest banks. And tonight, I want to pay tribute to five extraordinary Wall Street banks. Wall Street donors are powering this campaign. And to the millions of people watching across our country, please join us by making a donation to HillaryClinton.com. And here's why. Imagine a tomorrow where no child grows up. Imagine a tomorrow where more dreams die in the parking lots of banks than anywhere else. We have so much to look forward to. All the violence and division in our country. Greed, sorrow, children poisoned by toxic water. Corporations that use shell games to shift their headquarters overseas, rip off the taxpayers. Every problem we face anywhere in America. But we need to be tearing down every single American. And tomorrow, this campaign goes national. Thank you.
Okay, that didn't happen.
You bet it didn't.
FBI's investigation into Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton's email may wrap up soon. As Secretary of State, Clinton used an unsecured private email server in her home for official business. None of the emails on the system was marked classified at the time, but recently thousands had been reevaluated and some marked top secret. It's a crime to mishandle classified documents. Tonight, Nancy Cordes tells us a former Clinton staffer has been given immunity and is talking to the FBI.
Ryan Pagliano is an IT specialist who set up the private email server at Clinton's New York home. He took the fifth when he was called before Congress last year, but is cooperating with the FBI, an indication of the breadth of the investigation into whether anyone intentionally mishandled classified information. The Clinton campaign said today it is pleased that Pagliano is helping with a case the FBI director James Comey acknowledges is uniquely sensitive.
Is that I am very close personally to that investigation to ensure that it's done the way the FBI tries to do all of its work, independently, competently, and promptly.
The State Department released the last of Clinton's 30,000 emails on Monday. More than 2,000 of them contained information now considered classified, providing fodder for Republicans.
Because what she did was a criminal act. She shouldn't be allowed to run, okay?
White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest disputed that.
What I know that some officials over there have said is that she is not a target of the investigation.
In New York last night, former President Bill Clinton argued the email controversy has made his wife more relatable.
I saw this remarkable story by a woman who said, you know, I never really was enthusiastic until I read her emails. And it made me appreciate how really good she is as a human being as well as a public servant.
But the question has always been why a public servant would need to communicate solely via private email. Scott, a source close to the investigation, confirms tonight that Pagliano turned over security logs that show that the private server was never hacked by foreign entities.
Given the fact that more than 1,000 emails, and I recognize there's a dispute, have been described as classified, some even top secret, would you concede that you and the people who worked for you at the State Department were sloppy in the way you handled top secret information?
No, because let's be clear about this. There wasn't a single one of those that was marked classified, either sent or received. That hasn't changed. Now, what I think the public may not understand is that when a process is undertaken to determine whether emails should be made public, and remember, I asked, nobody told me to. I said, make them all public. I've been the most transparent public official in modern times, as far as I know.
I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
One way of trying to dig into this question would be the issues way, which we will certainly get into. Before we do that, perhaps something that Mr. Revere suggests this to me, we would ask, is there any real difference, generally speaking, between the kind of person who tends to be a Republican and a Democrat, before we get to the issues? Now, I notice Vance Packard, in his Status Seekers book, which summarizes a great deal of sociological finding of the last 10 years, says that if you will give him these four factors, he'll tell you 9 out of 10 whether the man is a Democrat or a Republican. These are the four factors. The money factor, which he says is increasing, income factor, the ancestry factor, the distance from the center of the city factor, and whether you're an egghead or not.
Marco Rubio is claiming on the campaign trail that Donald Trump has a small penis. No, that's not a joke. That's what Marco the Snake Rubio is actually claiming. That's part of his talking points given to him by the establishment since he's their favorite guy now that Jeb Bush dropped out since he just didn't have it in him. Here's an actual article. This is really from CNN.com. Donald Trump defends the size of his penis. That was at the Republican debate Thursday night on Fox because Donald Trump had to bring it up because Marco Rubio, literally on the campaign trail, is mocking his, quote, small hands. Everybody knows what he is implying. Very bizarre. Why would Marco Rubio be obsessed with the size of the penis of his opponent? Well, the answer to that may lie in some of the allegations surrounding his arrest when he was a teenager in a park that was allegedly frequented by people cruising for gay sex. And with photos like this surfacing that show what appeared to be Marco Rubio being prepared for his later life in the Illuminati Bohemian Grove establishment, just hanging out in the phone party there with a bunch of dudes, allegedly. So nothing really would surprise me at this point, since Marco Rubio, literally the establishment's favorites for the Republicans. Obviously, Hillary is the ultimate establishment. She probably will most likely win through all the voter fraud. But the reason why Marco Rubio is the establishment's front runner is obvious. He wants to legalize and then give citizenship and voting rights to all the illegal aliens. He's not concerned about closing the border at all. In fact, Marco the Snake Rubio, his campaign slogan is a new American century.
Okay, and I have said that, so I would like to take that back. He's really not that much of a lightweight. And as far as, and I have to say this, he hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee you. Okay. Moving on.
Thank you.
I believe a first-rate con artist is on the verge of taking over the party of Lincoln and Reagan. And now or never, we need to remind people of what's at stake here. We're about to lose the conservative movement to someone who's not a conservative, and the party of Lincoln and Reagan to a con artist.
At a rally this weekend, Trump said that he may ask the judge in the Trump University case, who he mentioned is Hispanic, to recuse himself because he's so hostile. Your reaction to that?
Well, I thought Trump said he was going to win the Hispanic vote. He said he was so popular among the Latinos, so he should actually want to keep him on the case if that's true. This is part of the clown act. This is what happens when someone is caught, like Donald Trump has been, as a con artist. This is a guy, you talked about Trump University earlier in your program, who went to people that were trying to improve their lives and convinced them to come into this program he created. They paid thousands of dollars and they got nothing for it. Now he's trying to pull the ultimate con job, and that is to get a hold of the United States of America. And so he's gone to all these struggling Americans who are really hurting economically, and he's preying upon those fears and those anxieties they have to get them to give him his vote. And he's been successful. This has to end. We cannot allow this guy to become the Republican nominee. The Democrats will tear him to shreds, and we're going to lose the party and the conservative movement, but more importantly, the election. And that means America is going to stay on the road it's on right now, which is the road of decline. I think it's par for the course in this very unusual election. Look, I go into these debates and I hope every question is a policy question. It hasn't been that way because Donald Trump has been perhaps the most vulgar, no, I don't think perhaps, the most vulgar person to ever aspire to the presidency in terms of how he's carried out his candidacy. And it's cut into a lot of these debates and some of the things that are asked about. I mean, and that's fine. I'm not complaining. It is what it is about what we get asked in these debates. But the majority of the questions had something to do with he said or she said. I would love to have a policy debate. And I think that's important. We're talking about the presidency of the United States here. And if you saw in that exchange, Donald Trump did not give a policy answer. He immediately retorted to attacking me personally. And I think it's come a point now. Voters deserve better than what they're getting in the, out of these debates and out of this campaign. We'll be right back.
guys like me when I ask you the negative questions?
Well, no, I think you've become very negative. I do think.
Yeah, me?
Yeah.
Why? Why would I do that?
I don't know. Who knows? You'll have to ask your psychiatrist. But I think you've become very negative.
Toward you?
Yeah. You know Melania?
Right? Yeah, the better half.
It's true.
And it's not even close. Well, but I want to get back to this.
And my boy Eric.
I think I've been very fair to you. Very fair.
You've been fair, but I think you get a little bit carried away with yourself, frankly.
You want to give me an example?
No, I'm not going to give you an example.
Come on.
It's not. We're just finished a debate, which I hear I just won based on all of the polls again. I've won a lot of debates, but I really had a good time tonight. I would say that.
'30s, that wasn't really the issue. The issue then was economic opportunity for the Negro, and that came during the war.
Aren't we confusing two things here? One is the general domestic approach to these parties. Now, there seemed to be agreement around the table on that. Namely, is this right? That the Democrats were more willing to use federal powers and more willing to spend money to bring about certain social changes. Is that right?
I agree, yes.
Because
the people who voted for them thought they were going to benefit.
Then this is a kind of ideological difference, if you will, ideology on a low level. Then we got over into race relations, and I think it was you, Mr. Revere, who was saying that this difference being discussed here is not ideological. That is, both sides, nationally at least, are for civil rights.
Yes.
What seems to happen is that as you execute them, different things occur, and it's the different things that aren't very clear yet.
Well, one thing that has happened is that the Negroes have become an important force in American politics. They're a large group, and they can and their favor can be bid for, and has to be.
And they vote very heavily in the northern cities.
And I think that that is. Has nothing to do with ideology.
Said before, I think American politics is a long and glorious history of non-ideology in which good things are accomplished by a sort of chaotic process.
But we're order out of chaos.
They get dug in.
There's also a substantive credibility problem here. I mean, you have Republicans saying Trump is not one of us, and yet a lot of the things that he's saying are said in coded language by other Republicans. I wrote a column last week about Paul Ryan, for instance, saying this is not a party that preys on people's prejudices, and yet you can think of lots of examples of Republicans doing exactly that, going back to Ronald Reagan giving a states' rights speech in Neshoba County, Mississippi in 1980. This goes on all the time in coded ways. Trump is saying some of these things more explicitly, and that makes them
you know,
I know it makes you uncomfortable too.
No, it doesn't make me uncomfortable. It just makes me want to choke you because it's ridiculous, and it's the creation of Trump. Because conservatives do not consider themselves bigots or homophobes or misogynists. Okay, what Cruz won at CPAC, and he won overwhelmingly. He is expanding the electorate by bringing in like-minded libertarians, young people. Trump is expanding the electorate by getting people who are sick of being called bigots because they want to secure the border. This is not a race, okay? Let's not go there.
I think it is. I mean, I think there's no question that what he's doing is appealing to race, and Republicans have done that for a long time.
I'm Juliana McCanus. Clifford Baines is out today volunteering for God Hates Bags.
This week, Congress approved an additional $200 million for border security. A fence has already been approved. Should America build a moat?
I think the answer is unequivocal. It's yes. We have two sides of a moat, but we don't have the other two.
It's a well-known fact that Mexicans are not buoyant.
they sink like rocks.
That's right.
So they're only able to cross where it's very shallow water.
I also think we should look into sea monsters.
I was going to say alligators, but it's...
Some sort of monster in the moat.
I think we're thinking inside the box if we're thinking a moat is just water. It could be raw sewage. It could be oil. It could be lava.
Sure.
It could be dragon fire.
Yes.
What do you think it's going to take to actually protect our borders? I mean, if we put a moat between the United States and Mexico, is that going to work? Those people are pretty determined.
They're pretty determined, but I think that the people on this side are pretty damn determined as well to keep people out. Now, I don't know if you've seen this, but they've been putting up cameras all along the border, and people at home can register to watch the borders and protect them.
Yeah, but Mexicans are also very good at catapult engineering.
We need to step up in our own catapult development.
And we got to start pointing some of those cameras at the sky.
And I also think we should put money back into diseased cows that we can throw back into Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Maybe you haven't noticed, but Washington is occupied by neocons. Seeking world domination, they are steering the U.S. empire toward endless wars abroad. And back at home, they feed us with an illusion of freedom, democracy, and choice presented by the two-party system. Now, they may seem like two distinct parties, but make no mistake about it, the Democratic and Republican parties function more like a single party that promotes the interests of corporations, special interest groups, and foreign governments, all of which profit from more war and human exploitation. But perhaps nowhere are the similarities more striking than the past two neocon administrations to occupy the White House. The grand old party's George W. Bush declared the War on Terror, then gave the world the Iraq War, Guantanamo Bay, CIA black sites, and a drone program, among a host of other ills, and seizing on the American people's weariness of military adventurism abroad, Barack Obama got himself on the Democratic ticket in 2008, campaigning on a platform of change and hope. But that change never really came to pass. Obama, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, dropped over 23,000 bombs on the Middle East in 2015 alone. Guantanamo remains open, and Bush's drone program across Africa and the Middle East has grown even more deadly. Obama even out-Bushed W by expanding the War on Terror to benefit the military-industrial complex. He allowed for the strengthening of extreme right-wing militias and governments, the emboldening of Gulf monarchies and apartheid Israel, and the development of a foreign policy agenda that's ironically become increasingly aligned with our sworn enemy, Al-Qaeda. Sure, the Iran deal was finally secured under Obama, but the Russian bear was also provoked under his watch with the destabilization of Ukraine, reigniting the Cold War. Now, here to talk to me more about the neocon Republicans and Democrats pulling the strings in Washington is Daniel McAdams, director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace, a nonpartisan initiative led by former politicians, policy advisors, and even former Bush aides who oppose U.S. interventionism and work to educate the public about the neocon takeover of America. And I began by asking him, who exactly are the neocons working behind the scenes, and how did they get so deeply embedded in Washington? Take a look.
Well, we could talk a long time about the origins of the neocons. Intellectually, they began in New York, in a small part of New York, you know, many decades ago. And they essentially, they came out of very left-wing Trotskyite circles. They slowly migrated from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party. There, of course, was a big migration under Reagan, where they found themselves all of a sudden placed in positions of relative power. I don't know whether Reagan, I don't think Reagan was a neocon for all of his other faults, but I think he was certainly infiltrated by the neocon establishment. They have continued in their positions. As a matter of fact, the second generation of neocons, Bill Kristol, who of course is the son of Irving Kristol, John Podoretz, whose father of course is one of the original neocons. The second generation has taken over. And now we're actually seeing a third generation of neocons. The younger, much more aggressive group of neocons, and these are people like Eli Lake, Jamie Kirchick, Michael Weiss. Foreign Policy Initiative is one of their home bases. That was originally the Project for New American Century, PNAC, which was Bill Kristol's outfit, which their big role was in pushing the Iraq war starting in the mid-90s. They were pushing for this war. And then, of course, as soon as 9/11 happened, most of the Pentagon wanted to attack Afghanistan, but the neocons said, no, forget that. We need to go after Iraq. So why are they so dangerous? Because they promote war. They promote what they call democracy at the barrel of a U.S. gun. It causes millions of people to be not only killed but maimed and have their lives ruined overseas. Thousands of Americans die in their ridiculous no-win wars. And it also has emptied the U.S. economy of trillions of dollars. So they're hell-bent on bankrupting our country, creating thousands and millions of new enemies overseas. They don't keep us safe. They make things worse. Unfortunately, they still dominate Washington.
And how does the two-party system encourage or even fulfill this neocon agenda for more war?
Well, neocons, in a way, can be very good chameleons. They are certainly comfortable in either party, and they love to whisper in the ears of people in power. Look, even just in the Obama administration, you see several prominent neocons. Let's just look at Victoria Nuland, who was the Assistant Secretary of State for Europe. Very, very important and powerful position. Well, she served as a top advisor to Dick Cheney, who everyone knows as a top neocon. She seamlessly moved over to the Obama administration, and she's the one who got us mixed up in this overthrow of the Ukrainian government, which has not turned out very well at all. Her husband, ironically enough, Robert Kagan, is from a whole family of neocons, and Kagan was, of course, a top advisor in the Bush administration. And then he went over to advise Hillary Clinton in the State Department. So you see them prominently in the Republican Party, but I think there's a group that will go equally to either party, but there's also a group that you see predominantly in the Democratic Party. And these would be called liberal interventionists, R2P, people, responsibility to protect people. They have the same philosophy, which is that you must use force to remake the world in our image. And these people would be like Susan Rice, Samantha Power, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. They're the ones who would be explaining the bombing of Syria or the undermining of Syria, the attack on Libya. They would be explaining it not in terms of realpolitik, but it's going to be good for the local people. Well, I think if you ask anyone who's been liberated in Libya how they like their wonderful new country, they won't answer, thank you very much, neocons. Thank you, liberal interventionists. The same is true in Iraq. So they easily migrate to all parties. They're considered the experts in Washington, sadly enough, and strangely and crazily enough, because they're always wrong about everything.
Well, now, are we talking here in this conception of presidential leadership about something which these parties believe in, or about the accident of the men they happen to nominate?
I have this word I use sometimes, opposames. Opposames are people and organizations who appear to be in opposition, often appear to be extreme opposition, but actually they're just the same attitude to life with a different dress on. I love the far right and the far left. I love that one. The far right, as symbolized by Adolf Hitler, is into centralized control, military dictatorship, concentration camps. The far, far left, as symbolized by Joseph Stalin, the absolute opposite to that, is into centralized control, military dictatorship, and concentration camps. Yeah, great. It's great to have choice in the world, isn't it?
Where you're from, let reason guide you. See all tracks lead you out from the dark.
up to the stars. Why can't you take the leaf off your mouth now that you have the facts on your side? Take a moment to reflect where we're going.
Ideology kills. It is not a childish game. Ideology kills. And I was very amused. I mean, the Heaven's Gate thing was a tragedy, but there were curious aspects to it. I mean, it was the week before Easter. All around me, I heard people saying things like, you know, how could people believe such crazy stuff? And by the way, honey, did you get a dress for service so we can go and celebrate the resurrection of the Redeemer? And you just wonder, you know, whose ox is getting gored here? Because something is absolutely nuts, but 400 million people believe it, that makes it okay. But if 20 people believe something nuts, that's a cult. I have an all of this gives me the creeps. I have an absolute horror of belief systems and cults. Keep one hand on your wallet and the other hand over your anal pore. This is the way to approach all of this. belief is hideous. It's also completely unnecessary. Ideology. Imagine a monkey walking around with the idea that he or she possesses certain truth. I mean, you have to lack a sense of humor to not see the absurdity of that. If you met a termite who told you he was on a quest for certain truth, a small smile would tug at your lips, I hope. Do you believe for a moment that we are different from that termite? I think not. I think not. We understand what we can understand. We build models. To do this without realizing the tentative nature of the enterprise is just damn foolishness. Here, my brother put it very well one time. He said, have you ever noticed that as we build the fire of understanding brighter, the greater the volume of darkness that is revealed? Or here, I'll put it for you in a geometric model. As the sphere of understanding expands, the surface area of ignorance necessarily grows ever larger. How could it be otherwise? Well, so then get a grip. That's why I say the thing to keep coming back to is the felt presence of immediate experience. Not how do I feel as a feminist or a Marxist or a devotee of Hieronymus Bosch or whatever. How do I feel? Period. Not through the filter of ideology. As I look back through history, as you look back through history, very few ideologies last very long without going sour or becoming toxic. So why should we assume, as all those naive societies in the past assumed, that we are, you know, have 95% of the truth and the other 5% will be delivered by our best people in the next 3 years? Fools have always believed that, but the smart money knows we ain't even close.
Lullaby. I know the scoop in the soul up on core. I bought the shit at the mom and pop store, and I get both of the songs the top score. I'll see him playing the small hip hop tour. They're treated like sex symbols out the stretch memos. Autograph impressed with lead pencils. And everybody thinks that they're the best. As if they're a pop band, test tube fluke. They bought a home that's the size of a ballpark. You only cruise property with a golf cart. But they no longer can sell it. But your records, when they first were tried, was our last brilliant effort.
Rapper said the darndest things that you'll ever hear. Like I heard you sold this many units. I said, wish me better luck next year.
Hey, hey, this seems to be too much water to pressure underneath your genre mesh blur. And to be honest, I never took any rest in the mind of the young black teenagers. I thought they gone to we replaced my on racks with cheese graters to use on these bungee mine. Of the LA rapper swinging from a monkey vine. Somebody used to result in a money fine. But now
rapper said the darndest things that you ever hear. Like I'm edgy and I'm risque, and I say better luck next year.
I'm blind to the worst word of your mama's joke when he said how much he pushed the envelope. A group of sexually ambivalent nihilists crying from an ovarian since taking out a vegetarian dish. I delighted a German band that barely exists. But me, my name's never on the full color flyer. Cause I'm just a dull bus driver. Thinking to my head is a ball of dust fibers. Two of the fools up under the trucker hats. Sagging into it, you can see the plumber's cracks. There was no metaphorical meaning. So to bother 16 people, so reporting one seating is just horribly demeaning. Yeah, and you can't get burners, I want the colors back. When they hear you down, my dears, you're such a tramp. Jimmy Jackson and crabs in your bubblegum raps.
Rapper said the darndest things that you'll ever hear. Like I did a song with so-and-so and I got signed, but the checks will never clear.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
Get busy.
you dot your eyes with hearts. I hold a fork and knife under the guise of art and shoot a betting pig. English tapped and transmitted. Motherfuckers flock like chads to a whippet. Daddy bad credits, spill ketchup on a console. Pair of glowing eyes, staring daggers from the foxhole.
God flow.
They stay gold like Ponyo. Hard-headed, war-bedded, four-legged mongrel.
Speak slow or the Jim Beam shoots and split hairs over if it is a Jim Reed tune. On the big screen, pigskins go team go. In the corner there's a cat with his whole week toast. Foreman of the flag in the last boot left that the rest of us avoided cause the bathroom stench. On a bench there's some papers with the local fair. There's a chicken that I dated but I won't go there.
We face down in the soup, bent like a bow or a bow or a U. Bad guest tramps through the house in his shoes. You a bad, bad man or a clown with balloons.
We face down in the soup, bent like a bow or a bow or a U. Loud as a crowd getting down as a stoop. Throw your oars in the air or get out the canoe.
Hey. Winner in the sh**, pinner in his lip. Bubba winner, winner, TV dinner, kids, get her dead. Treasure map full of pushpins, leather on his hoofs since 7'6", never with a second set of footprints. Long death worm, spinning in a DSI time lapse. Freedom fighter, beat up biters, why back dry? Real earth hides in the syntax, even if you don't take kindly to riffraff. We do, boneheads illustrate a vessel to believe through. Nestled by the free green pea soup special. One foot of mutts that walk 3 feet in front of their guts. Sipping mush out of cups and still drag drills to the dig site. No way, no gray hairs, only silver pinstripes. Pills in the palms of a million dendrites. Just about sick at his building's insides.
We face down in the soup, bent like a bow or a bow or a U. Stone to the bone, getting thrown through the roof with a buzz like your wife's second strike on the feud.
We face down in the soup, bent like a bow or a bow or a U. Knock, knock, Malin got a crown to remove. Walk in with the broke, walk out with the food.
Wild talk from the hallway steps through the sheetrock walls and the crawl space vents. And his ears lapped off and a dog leg left and the blood in his beard on the salt stained ends. Sugar on top of his sharply worded, ribbing with a griffin in his car seat swerving. Shotgun in the marquee merging and his hand on a horn and a sorry sermon. One eye closed like I'm Sandy Duncan, the other on the prize in a Stanley Tough French. Paralyzed from the pancreas up when he shook hands with a man in his family truck bed. Can't be fun, get spoiled and street quit. Malice when the malins get the royal treatment. Oils and free edition, rare collections of falcons and helmets and bears with weapons.
We face down in a soup, bent like a bow or a bow or a U. Sleep on a couch with a mouth full of chew. Wake up spellbound, hellhounds on the loose.
We face down in the soup, bent like a bow or a bow or a U. Drinking water from the spout of the fountain of youth. And we foam at the mouth and we howl at the moon. H-M-M, H-H-H-M-M, rock, spot. H-M-M, rock, spot. H-H-M-M, rock, spot.
Now, go find the others.com.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.